Welcome to the Power Players Talk Show on Building Fortunes Radio with your host, Chris Molinari. Up close and personal conversations with powerful and successful people who give our listeners the inside look on what it takes to move from average and ordinary to the top of your game. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Power Players Talk Show on buildingfortunesradio.com. Now, on to our show with your host, Chris Molinari.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to me standing in for Chris Molinari on Building Fortunes Radio. This is her very favorite Power Players Talk segment with her very, very favorite guest. His name is Mark Hankins. Mark is an attorney over in Tampa, I think, or somewhere over there on the Gulf side of Florida. I'm over here on the ocean side of Florida, so we're socially distancing ourselves pretty much. I think across the state is pretty good social distancing for our radio show. And Mark's a really great guy.
It may not be far enough, according.
Yeah, depending on which statistics you're following. But I really enjoy listening to Mark when Chris Molinari is here. But she had to step away. I think she got a toothache. I know she loves it when I just kind of expose that. But, you know, welcome to being human. So the reality is that she asked – well, she didn't ask me. I just jumped in and we said, you know, we're going to do the radio show anyway. So Mark is here. He's a great attorney over on the other side of Florida. And we're going to kind of skew this radio show to some things that I think you might find interesting, and that is legal aspects in the coronavirus era. So I'm somewhat fascinated by this because we talk about social distancing, and then there's jury duty. How do you do that? We talk about social distancing, and then there's courtrooms. We talk about social distancing, and there's prisons or holding cells and stuff like that. And you know, viruses or whatever don't really follow man-made rules. So it's very interesting to see what's going on. And I'm also somewhat, the word is confused in my philosophy on how I would handle all the prisoners being released because of the coronavirus thing all across the world. So we're going to talk a little bit about how coronavirus might have impacted the legal field, and I'm going to kick this off for Mark Hankins. And Hankins is spelled H-A-N-K-I-N-S. If you want to hear the previous radio shows Mark has done, if you go to buildingfortunesradio.com, go to the guest section and look his last name up, Hankins, H-A-N-K-I-N-S. You'll be able to see the different radio shows that we've done. So, Mark, thanks for being here.
Well, it's a pleasure to join you, and I will just say at the outset, one of the things, I travel to courthouses throughout Florida, and about 4 weeks ago when it was first being, you know, bruited that there were going to be serious implications to the coronavirus, the judges were all meeting and deciding what they were going to do, and the very first thing they did was they got rid of certain types of hearings, and the two main types of hearings they got rid of were jury trials, and they got rid of large cattle call hearings, which are things like small claims where they have the same room often that they would use to put a venire in that they were going to pick a jury from in a large formal courtroom. They would pack in, you know, 100 people who had been sued in small claims. And those were the kinds of hearings and those were the kinds of meetings they did not want to have anymore. So those were the first to go by the wayside. And there were still in-person hearings after that for a while. And then they stopped that. And now anything that happens by phone. So this is what we're seeing as an impact. So the courts are essentially operating on skeleton crews. I'm not even sure that the judicial assistants are coming in or the judges are coming in. They may be doing everything by phone and just having things forwarded. But that's what's happened at the courts.
So and, now what I about – yeah, I'm sorry. Keep going, please, and then I'll ask some questions.
I have a few phone hearings that are still on the schedule, but and I have some things that are, you know, a month or two out that are on the schedule that may or may not still be there when that month is up. So,
now, say, for instance, if I had a small claims court thing and maybe I was suing somebody under small claims and then these things are going on, does that mean my case, if you will, if I'm using the right term, is put off until later? Or is it still going on, but it's going on over the phone or through video? Or how do they handle those things?
those are going to be in person. I do not think they're going to be able to devise any method to do those on the phone. And so essentially there is what's called a continuance. It is what the court, it's the court name, the court term for pause button. So there is a continuance for these. And the court is going to, you know, set a hearing at a later date.
And how about things like, you know, personal stuff like divorces, child support hearings, things like that? What happens in those situations? Same thing?
If it's fairly routine and it's, you know, like a hearing on a minor issue, that might go on over the phone. I don't think you're going to find people trying divorce cases, you know, in any, how can I put it, meaningful way, unless it's in person. So those aren't final hearings for that, for contentious ones are not going to be happening. That's just the bottom line.
Well,
so those people's lives are in essence on hold, at least in terms of a certain aspect of their life, just as all of our lives are. You know, we're not going to the store except, you know, infrequently. We're not going to the beauty parlor. They're talking about reopening those here.
Whoops, your phone faded for a second. So Mark, your phone faded for a second. You're still gone. Good old Verizon if you're over on that side of Florida. So good old Verizon. So your phone's out. Your phone is still out. Oh, he dropped. Okay, so what we're going to do, he's going to be calling back in a second. So we're going to give him enough time to be able to call back in. And while we're doing this, I don't have a commercial lined up for this. Oh, here he comes. Here we go. Okay,
apologies.
Perfect, Mark, you're back. Yep, yeah, no problem.
Yes.
So what phone carrier do you have over there? Is it Verizon or is it somebody else?
I have T-Mobile.
And okay, got
I
it.
I apologize, but this was all I had handy. And this is a brand new phone, and it is supposedly a lot better sounding than my old one. So I chanced it.
You sound good, but stuff happens, so don't worry about that stuff. Poop happens when it comes to technology. We roll with the punches. Okay, so where
we
I
have
mark,
one
I think
little...
we lost...
I was just going to say we have one of those little femtocells in one of our closets, and it's supposedly hooking us into the cell network, but you know, hiccups happen.
Oh, yeah. That's okay. Now, so basically what you kind of said before we lost you is that everybody's life is on pause, including a lot of these things being on pause as well.
Right. And also, you know, what I was saying is there is talk of reopening things. I've heard that beauty parlors are going to be allowed to reopen for one customer at a time. And, I think what you're going to see with President Trump this evening on the television is an acknowledgement that the natives are getting restless and that people want to get back to work, that people want to get their lives off of hold. People want to be able to go to the park. People want to be able to maybe not go to the movie theater, maybe not go to the crowded restaurant, maybe not the disco or the hot spot, but there are a lot of places where this virus isn't. There are some where it's broken out, surprisingly, like Sioux Falls in the meatpacking plant. But, you know, I think we're on the backside of this hurricane. We've gone through the eye. The deaths are a lagging indicator because it takes a while for people who are on ventilators to make it or not make it. And they've been on the ventilators a couple of weeks now. And we're going to see, I believe, hospital admissions drop off. We're going to see deaths drop off. And we're going to be able to, you know, poke our heads up and look around at the economic wreckage and decide what we want to do from here on out. And hopefully we have a couple of treatments. Hopefully we have a couple of preventatives. Hopefully the virus or the vaccine, if it is safe, is on the way. But all of these remain to be seen. What we do know is that our constitutional rights are, at the moment, being severely constricted. Now, one of the things that is a truism in constitutional jurisprudence is that the Constitution is not a suicide pact. That was you know, stated by justice. And indeed, you will find occasionally the Supreme Court acting against the letter of the Constitution. However, the Declaration of Independence was a suicide pact. They basically pledged their lives, their honor, and that sort of thing. And you can see it right there in black and parchment. So with that being the case, really the courage to reopen things, the courage to go to work, the courage to protect our elderly and our vulnerable populations as best we can while we get on with life is what we really need right now.
Excellent. So in reference to, oh gosh, you opened up a can of worms as far as freedoms and stuff like that. Let's talk a little bit about the impact on people relative to their personal choices. You referenced vaccines coming out. You know, we know the drug company is going to push for a big vaccine. And most people would say and by the way, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. Everybody would label me an anti-vaxxer because I question vaccines. So it seems like if you question anything, all of a sudden you're an anti-vaxxer. So because we never get the flu virus right, and you use the term safe, and, you know, doctors and everybody else who are pro-vaccine say vaccines are safe and effective, and that seems to be the mantra. You know, it's on the label, and it's not true. There's been no studies that say they're safe, and there's been no studies that say they're always effective. So the reality is now they're rushing through this coronavirus thing, and people are clamoring for the government to save them through a vaccine for coronavirus. I could see the peer pressure being that everybody has to get vaccinated. And for people like me, I might say or want to say, I'll pass on this one. So I won't give them my whole anti-vaccine thing, but I'll just say I'd like to pass. Will I be able to say that? Or what privileges do you anticipate me losing because I say, nah, I think I'll pass? So I'll let you open up that can of
worms. There's no such thing as an anti-vaxxer. There is simply no such thing as an anti-vaxxer. Even the person who is most against vaccines and the vaccine schedules we have today recognizes that in some cases vaccines are valuable and work. The question is, how have the schedules gotten so heavy? Why are we vaccinating people for inappropriate things? Why are we continuing to use vaccines that have preservatives and things like squalene and things like mercury and other strange and wonderful chemicals in them? Especially when we can use single unit dose vaccine packaging, and we do not have to use the multi-dose packaging that results in the need to use preservatives and so forth. We have people at major conferences about vaccine production and vaccine research saying, if you can make a vaccine without adjuvants, you know, by all means do it. And yet we hear, you know, most of them more or less sadly require adjuvants. And these are the things that cause the autoimmune disorders and all sorts of other problems. Now, to jump to the next thing, in terms of requiring people to have vaccines, there is a theory, and I will tell you, it's my theory, and I'm not a legal genius, and I'm not the most, you know, I'm not the be-all and end-all. I don't go to the Supreme Court and have them, you know, say, wow, he's here. No, I don't even go. But if you look at the Third Amendment, which is an amendment that is very seldom touched in American law, the Third Amendment says the government cannot station soldiers in your house. And that was an abuse that was going on prior to the American Revolution. The British would, for whatever reason, have a soldier move in with you. And oddly enough, it's being replayed in the Uyghur areas of China, where the Chinese have a soldier move in with a Uyghur family. And this is, you know, they're both a symbol of authority. They're a burden on the family, and, you know, they're spying, and they're giving the family their version of things. So it's a very intrusive thing that happens. Now,
so we can follow with that example. I know there's a lot of people that don't know what a Uyghur is. So what is a Uyghur in reference to the example that you used?
A Uyghur is a Turkic Muslim living in Western China, and it is an ethnicity that is creating problems for the Chinese, and they essentially want to assimilate them by force if necessary. Now, if we look at the human body, it's much more intimate to you than your home. And if we look at a vaccine, if they put these little soldiers in you, they're never coming out. It's not like you can move the soldier back out of the house. Once this is in your body, it's there for good. So we're talking about a far more intimate invasion of your privacy, of your person, of your, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness than anything you can imagine. So I do not know how the Third Amendment does not apply to this. If they can find the right to privacy in penumbral emanations from other from a number of different amendments, this is square in the umbra of the Third Amendment.
What's a little bit perplexing for me is why more people aren't up in arms about these types of issues with mandatory vaccines. And the bottom line is we're going to see that. I'm predicting that with the coronavirus thing, you're going to have to be temperature checked or DNA checked or whatever before you go to a doctor, before you go into a medical building, before you do this, before you do this, before you do this. I could see almost like a TSA checklist of checkpoints that you'd have to go through if this thing is allowed to continue the way they're doing it. So I could definitely see them saying, well, if you don't have your mandatory vaccine, you can't drive, you can't come into a public building, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't go to a baseball game, whatever it might be. I could see those things happening, and I don't know why more people aren't freaking out, as how can they do that, take away my personal freedoms. So do you have any comments on that at all?
Well, they're looking right now at linking the operating systems of Android and Apple phones so that they will communicate with each other in terms of unique identifiers, and you will basically be walking around with at first a choice, but later on no choice about this. You'll be walking around and your movements will be traced and the movements of others will be traced. And if there's ever an instance where you come up with a communicable disease, they will be able to follow a very clear path back to anyone that you were near, and they're going to be able to warn all of them. Now, this also, you know, could trace a political idea from one person to the next. So that's a scary thing.
And in China, they do things like this already. So a lot of people are saying, you know, I might be thinking, oh, geez, you know, this is, sounds like science fi, and maybe you're a little bit on the paranoid side, and here's your tinfoil hat. But a lot of people don't realize that they're doing this already in communist China. Like, there's a lot of things that are happening with facial recognition, with the stuff that you're referencing. A lot of people use their phone to buy things in China. So there's a lot of stuff. You're in a surveillance state if you're in China and other places, and we're becoming a surveillance state as well. And I could see how the excuse for the surveillance state starts off with coronavirus, and pretty soon they're going to know everything you're doing. There'll be no right to privacy at all. Privacy will be will never know.
And the big thing that you know, people talk about is the social credit score. And I point out that the social credit score was here in the U.S. before, and it was specifically outlawed. When the big three credit reporting agencies got information from Welcome Wagon, there were things on your credit report like whether your children had shoes or whether you had liquor bottles in your trash. So this was all removed, and that's why you don't have Welcome Wagon anymore. And people don't realize that.
Wow. Okay, so, I got you off topic just a little bit. Let's go back to the coronavirus and people in jail or prison. So I read in the headlines that people are petitioning. I might be using the wrong word. A prisoner might be petitioning the federal government, including Donald Trump, that they want to get out because they can't adhere to the social distancing things, and coronavirus is a deadly disease, and they're basically putting their themselves at risk by being incarcerated. And they're asking
them
to be let out.
Well, nonviolent offenders, they have been letting them out, and we had one here that was released, and the next day he killed somebody right here in Tampa. But when you look at this situation, it seems like anybody and everybody gets out, asterisk, except Julian Assange. But we won't go there.
Yeah. Wow.
the notion that you leave people in prison when you have a communicable disease that that you can't get a handle on in close quarters is, I know that it seems awful to let people out who are supposed to be in jail. But if they're nonviolent, it is almost probably, you know, violations of various international conventions to leave them in there. This is cruel and unusual punishment. It should not be a death sentence when your sentence is 6 months. So furloughing them, letting them come back later and complete their sentence is probably the right thing to do. Now, in the case of the one that they let loose in Tampa, he had a 35-count rap sheet. And he was a dangerous hombre, and they let him out. But, you know, sometimes these mistakes are going to be made, and they become very they become something all eyes turn to. I'm not sure, you know, even as conservative as I am, I'm not sure that all of these releases at all are wrong. It just is something that you know, when they do make a mistake, it's glaring.
Especially the person and the family that were hurt in that instance, you know, the people that were, the person that was killed and the family associated with that. So, and so those are tragic. Let's talk about being an attorney. Because of these things, will this have an impact on attorneys' incomes one way or another?
I think it will. Because attorneys have to be there for deals, and deals aren't happening right now. People aren't buying and selling businesses. People aren't doing, in many cases, things that they were trying to do in business. They're on hold. And even those who are still doing business, it's harder. I have a friend who was complaining today on Facebook. He went to the paint store, couldn't get it done because they weren't trying to make him order his paint on the phone from outside the store rather than interacting with a clerk. And it just didn't work. So these are the frustrations. And until these get sorted out, the commerce is not going to work the way it did, and attorneys are not going to make money the way they did. I don't have any hearings. Now, I do have a position I picked up approving these EIDL laws, loans. But I haven't even started yet.
Well,
you know, but I thought I'll do my part.
Yep, I'm not sure, but I thought I read in the headlines that the government ran out of money already. So for those EIDL loans and the Paycheck Protection Program, I think they're going to have to probably approve more money, which they probably will, and we'll just have to go through the political wrestling that they usually go through, you know, which is just absolutely ridiculous. Now,
well, what people don't realize is there's a pipeline full of these things that are backlogged that need to get done. The money may be out because the money's been provisionally allocated, but checks haven't gone out to borrowers, and their loans are
it's
not approved.
Now, we have a tendency in this country of trying to make people accountable for their mistakes, or, you know, somebody's got to be responsible. So this is probably going to be a mess for lots of people when this whole thing shakes out, because lots of lawyers are probably going to want to sue or be used to sue lots of people for lots of things. And, you know, it's just going to be a mess. So what's your take on – and I'm just going to make my little political statement. I heard people ridiculously trying to sue the government of China for creating this. So this is like class action lawsuits trying to sue China. And I really don't think China is really worried about that.
Well, I don't think it's, number one, I don't think it's ridiculous. Number two, I think there's a great way to very quickly collect on that. And briefly, the facts are this. China had the lab that was making this stuff. They have said we were making it in a lab. They have said you were paying us to do it. And they referenced the $3.7 million payment. Now, their lab let it out. And I think that's pretty clear. Otherwise, this particular virus hit the lottery in terms of fast replication and having the multivariate attachment that allows it to get into cells and lots of types of cells. So this is a dangerous thing that China did, and it backfired on them. And then we know that they disappeared whistleblowers. We know that they destroyed records. We know that they lied to the WHO multiple times and the WHO bought it. And so there's no question they're liable. And we owe them, you know, $1 trillion or so on our treasury bonds that we sold them. And we could declare that debt odious, null, and void and use that money to pay victims in this country. So I think it's ridiculous to sue China. And
right,
it wouldn't have been ridiculous to sue Saudi Arabia, but
I'm talking about like an individual. Yeah, I get the government being able to do that sort of stuff. They have a different type of leverage. But if Peter Mingles wanted to sue China, or citizens of the U.S. wanted to try to sue China, that'd be I could see that being a really long haul, and probably end in a whole bunch of lawyers making a lot of money, but probably not work very well. And for some reason, I just don't think China really paying that much attention to it. Now, the government could just say, well, we're not going to pay you. And they can, you know, that's a good Donald Trump negotiation battle. And I could see that happening at that level. But as I'm talking about how, you know, Mrs. Goldsmith, whose dog died of something that she considers something relative to Chinese, suing the Chinese government, I just don't see that happening.
Well, if you remember 9/11 was basically a slam dunk case against Saudi Arabia, and the U.S. government stepped in to stop it from going on.
Right.
If the U.S. government says, rah, rah, go right ahead, and we'll help you collect, then that's a whole different story.
It's going to be messy. So let's talk about on the smaller level. I don't know what example to make up, but I'm going to make up that I needed a product. I couldn't get the product, say, for instance, like that paint that you're referencing, that other lawyer. I needed the paint. I couldn't get the paint. I lost a job. You guys are responsible. Your people are incompetent, blah, blah, blah. Some lawyer is going to say, you know, I have grounds to sue that person or sue that company. Are there going to be a lot of those types of lawsuits that spring up after this is done?
Well, consequential damages are very hard to get in the law, and that is the kind of damage where there is an intervening situation that you claim, well, because this happened, I couldn't do that. And I don't think you're going to see those kinds of cases. But the case where somebody infects somebody else or keeps an infected worker in their kitchen and everybody who eats there gets infected, something like that, these are going to be cases that are going to happen. And these are going to be cases that are going to be won by attorneys. And these are going to be cases that are going to knock down people who are sloppy about coronavirus protection. One of the things that may keep a lot of economic activity from starting back up is insurance companies.
Explain that. No, we're here. So explain what that means.
So if I have a business and I can't get clearance from my insurance company to do X, and I go ahead and do X, it's not going to be covered. For instance, I live in a community. It's not a gated community, but it has a lot of community parks. It has a community recreation center. It's all taped off with yellow tape. Why? Because their insurance company told them, don't run the tennis courts, don't run the playgrounds, don't run the lodge, tape it all off, keep it closed until further notice. So insurance drives a lot of what businesses do or don't do. So we're going to need clearance from the insurance companies to get things back to normal.
Wow.
If they do get back to normal.
Wow. And are the insurance companies going to start rewriting their death benefits or health benefits regarding something like this, do you think, to try to handle like pandemic-type situations sometime in the future or even now?
Well, I'm sure that if you have a restaurant, there are already things written in about communicable diseases, and I have a feeling a lot of those clauses, a lot of those sections are going to migrate to other sorts of businesses where they're not right now. You'll have, you know, beauty parlors under stricter scrutiny. You'll have something like my, you know, my neighborhood's lodge and so forth under stricter scrutiny. So all these things, all this language is probably already written, and it's probably already written for restaurants, and you'll just see it migrate to other policies.
Now, we're a little bit over time, but this is a fascinating subject, so we can go a little bit longer. What I think, just like with 9/11, when I watched the two planes fly into those buildings, or watched, you know, the replays of those two planes fly into those buildings, I said to myself, my life will never be the same, or our lives are never going to be the same. There's going to be some drastic changes that are going to come that I don't even know about, but I just saw this is going to be an opportunity for a lot of my freedoms to be gone away, and things are going to be different. Heightened security, excuses for this, excuses for that. Will, in our lifetime, ever go back to pre-coronavirus lifestyle, do you think? Or what's going to be the new lifestyle that we enter as this starts to shake out?
I think we will get back to basically a pre-corona lifestyle, because I think one of the things that's going to happen is all of this gain-of-function research that's been going on is going to come to a screeching halt globally with watchdogs to make sure that Fort Detrick and the Wuhan Virology Institute and whatever is in Mumbai are not doing the things that they've been doing, even under the name of, well, let's see what the other side can do by trying to do it ourselves. Of course, we're never going to use it, you know, unless we get the call. So that's going away. The other thing I think we're going to see is we're going to see this idea of a global manufacturing hub go away. China was used as a hub when it should have been a node all along. And there were key things like microchips, where we would keep a factory here that could make them in case something went wrong in China. But maybe there's going to be three factories or four factories, and they will be widely scattered over continents, and they will be all capable of making the same thing if one of them goes down. And we will not have single sourcing or even double sourcing. We're going to have three or four.
Wow. So that whole concept of, supply by demand or, buy the next minute supply chains, those are going to be somehow rethought about as well. So I remember Apple was always like really big and really praised on the idea that, you know, they're so efficient that they can figure out, you know, when we need this part, exactly when and where, and be able to put their iPhones together with their, you know, whatever number of millions of parts, and be able to get that supply exactly as needed. A lot of that stuff is going to change. So, okay, so hopefully you're going to be able to come back and we're going to be able to continue this conversation, because I have more questions for you, but we're running out of time. And I'm going to say thanks for being here, and I'll let you wrap it up so you get the next minute or so.
Okay. I think the most important thing to do is not fear. FDR said we have nothing to fear but fear itself. We have a little bit of a fear of a coronavirus, and that's appropriate. We also need to be afraid of government taking too many of our liberties away and having too much surveillance. But we also need to just get on with it, and that's what everybody needs to understand. They've got us cowering in our homes. It needs to stop, and there will be a massive protest on May the 2nd if it doesn't. So, and you can look that up online. And that's, I think, what people need to know. The show must go on.
Excellent. Okay, good. So we're going to be back. I don't know if it's going to be next week or the week after that, but we're going to be back with Mark Hankins. I love this conversation. So thanks, Mark, for taking some time out of your really busy schedule, and we will keep everybody posted. And Chris will be back, I'm sure, maybe next week, and we'll see everyone next time. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you all.
You've been listening to the Power Players Talk Show on BuildingFortunesRadio.com. with Chris Molinari. Up close and personal conversations with powerful and successful people who give our listeners the inside look on what it takes to move from average and ordinary to the top of your game. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Power Players Talk Show segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Thanks for listening. Spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.